Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Weekly Highlight Podcast. Going into week two of the season, we continued our in-season series with coach and coordinator vets, hitting plenty of prevalent topics in the football world. To start the week, we were joined once again by the founder of DailyDiscipline.com, Brian Kite. Kite stopped by to share his thoughts on the word entitlement and how it applies to coaching today. Here, Kite addresses how coaches themselves can be entitled.
So if you've been coaching for 20 years, I don't believe that you are entitled to let people stay out of your way and coach however you want for the next five. I don't believe that you've earned that. I believe that you are like me. You are on the hook for how good of a coach you are this year. Now, what you're entitled to is you're entitled to operating room, but just because you've been coaching for 20 years, or because, like, it'd be the same thing for me, Keith. Again, my standard. You know, I've been doing this for 15 years. Does that mean that if I go in and I'm not operating at my best, that my client gets to say, well, you know, you've been doing this for 15 years, so I'll let you keep doing that? No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. The standard is I have to earn it every week, every day, every month, and I have to be good right now. So I think one of the areas of entitlement coaches struggle with the entitlement that they think coaching for 10, 15, or 20 years buys them. I've been coaching for 20 years, so give me credibility. And they think that somehow that is an earned thing based on the past.
For our second show of the week, Rob Everett talked with us about how coaches can evaluate players, units, and their team. According to Everett, self-evaluation by players is just as important.
Player self-evaluation is invaluable, and that's something that can be done. The play-by-play grade, you know, a player can evaluate themselves on 0-1-2. You know, they can do stuff like that. But you really get an idea of what the players are thinking, what, you know, the players assessing themselves is really them assessing you as well. Because if they're saying, I have a good grasp of this, and you agree, you know, then you're on the right path. If they're saying that they have a good grasp of it and you don't agree, something, you know, there's the disconnect there in the instruction. So getting their feedback is exactly right. And then the other thing is the creation of practice. This is totally true, and this is why evaluation is so important, and why coming up with numbers and ways to quantify things are important. Because now you're making decisions off of real information. And you mentioned the tackling thing, and you know how I feel about it. But our tackling grade is broken down into five bites. That drives what we're going to work on, both on as an individual, as a position group, and as a unit. And also what we may not need to work on, or what's not happening. And it's not, oh, I think this is. It's, I know, because here's the evaluation that's there. And like you're saying, from an offensive line standpoint, you know, these are the blocks we continually are executing, you know, correctly or incorrectly. How does that factor in there? So I think the whole thing on this numbers evaluation, it really will make us better coaches, because we're making deliberate decisions rather than things that we've done off in the past just because that's the way that we do them, or just what we think is happening based on film. Now we're putting data together with the sniff test of, this is what I think, and now here, based on the numbers, this confirms or disproves my thoughts, and how do we work that together to put the best plan forward to the players?
On Wednesday, we continued our Trends Day series with Charlie Coyner and Zach Dunn. Here, the pair goes over using the unbalanced package.
That is something that jumped out at me watching really all levels of football. And, you know, we've always, like you just said, we always had to be ready for an unbalanced or heavy formation. But there's so many different ways that you can get into it. And it looks to me like it's part of the base package now for most offenses. And everybody has a different terminology for it. But, you know, I've always called it unbalanced or heavy unbalanced, where you had a four-man surface, meaning you either had two tight ends or two tackles to one side of the center or the other, and then just a normal over imbalance to where, you know, you may have a receiver covering up another. And the thing that I think that shows up as much as anything is that it is forcing defenses to communicate in the front and the back end as far as not only who's eligible, but, you know, how are you going to fit your gaps? How are you going to defend all these things? And now it's not only the unbalanced formations that you're trying to fit up with defenses. Now you've got all the different types of offenses that are showing up that are incorporating your quarterback and spreading the whole 53 yards of the football field width-wise. It's a bear right now if you're a defense coordinator.
Yeah, Keith, just to piggyback on what some of Crawley was saying, you know, just like empty checks, defenses usually only carry a few unbalanced checks into a game, really, probably no more than two. So I think teams, you know, some of these offenses are starting to get to their unbalanced looks to get predictable looks and to see what they're getting. And, you know, it's pretty hard on the defense to sit back and practice unbalanced looks or tackle overlooks a lot. So offenses are starting to get into those like they would the empty to get simple, easy checks. You know, just to make the job easier on the OC and the quarterback to know what he wants. I mean, you know, I can't think of how many different ways you can really play unbalanced or tackle over, but I think another reason teams are going to this is because of the tight front. These teams playing these zeros and four eyes with the, you know, with the backers sitting in the B gaps. It's making it easier for teams to pin everything inside now and catch the edge, put the ball on the edge, and where you can pin everybody down.
On Thursday, USA Football's senior manager in education and training, Andy Ryland, spoke with us on training away penalties. The former Penn State linebacker told us how to avoid the holding penalty here.
Coaches have always said, you know, stay tight, stay inside. Hey, it's okay if you hold, if you're keeping them tight and you got the steering wheel and all the things that coaches say. But do we understand the distances that starts to look bad on film or look like a penalty to the official? So we can say some big words like keep it tight. What does that mean to the player? Have we ever addressed that? How do they feel that in their body? That's a huge thing. And then to your point, the recapturing poor situations is another thing that I think coaches should train probably more often than they do, because a lot of those holding penalties aren't for lack of effort. It's trying to recapture something. It's, hey, we're getting pulled away from, and then we feel like we need to do something to make a successful play. It was introduced to me under the term bad body drills, and it's really more bad position drills. But, you know, things where we'll take a pass set, for instance, but we're going to put both of our offensive linemen's hands on the inside edge of the shoulder pad. So this could be a guard with a three technique rushing, a center with a nose, or, you know, any one of our tackles facing an end. So he has both of his hands on the inside shoulder as if the defender is about to turn the corner. And so we'll start the drill in that position, and then he's going to have to kick and work his feet, and he's going to have to refit his hands to try to battle back and not, you know, open up that turnstile, but fight and stay square and refit and work those feet. And we can, I love your point, it's hard to recreate those sometimes in our team periods. So you need to manufacture these sometimes within our individual period, where we're going to be in a bad position and we're going to have to work our feet and work our hands to get back out of it. Well, we like to do a lot of work, or I used to do a lot of work, where we would start guys pre-engaged, because obviously we want to make sure safety is king, but they'd be in a bad posture. So maybe we wouldn't let them bend their knees and they'd be, you know, hinged at the hips, or, you know, they'd be at an angle that they didn't like. Maybe their feet would start narrow. And then they have to work to refine a good posture throughout the course of the drill so they could try to win. But what we're trying to do is recapture bad positions, because I think that is what happens a lot of times on all these penalties. Maybe we get a bad initial step, we get a bad read. Now all of a sudden our engagement isn't kind of that perfect thing we'd trained. And I go, uh-oh, what am I going to do here?
To close out the week, our host, Coach Keith Grabowski, shared his ideas for better coaching cues. Grabowski made sure to emphasize the importance of using external cues.
A coaching cue I used to use, now I've gotten away from it as I've learned more about how to engage the core, but this would be an example of it, that when I was teaching quarterbacks to really get that turn that I wanted, what were they doing with that other arm? And I would tell them, I want you to imagine that there's a pane of glass behind you, like break the glass. So break the glass became the coaching cue that really got them to drive that elbow backwards. Something I got away from using, but an example of that. I can think to an example from this past summer. I was training a younger athlete and teaching him about blocking and what I wanted him to do and to get him to roll the hips. And this is kind of before I really got cued in on internal versus external cues. And what I did, I found like telling him to roll his hips really wasn't helping him, that it was more about, you know, I said, imagine there's a balloon between you and the defender, you know, me being the defender. I said, I want you to move your hips so that you pop the balloon, right? So pop the balloon means that he was having to force his hips forward to do that, popping the balloon, causing that pressure to make it pop. So thinking about what you can do to create those cues that are external with your players, I think can help. Because we always say, like, you know, you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. Well, we're coaching it all the time. I think the difference is understanding that, are we just out there talking or are we actually coaching our players? Are we saying things that essentially make a difference? It doesn't mean that you're not a good coach. It's just that maybe you're not using the cues that are most useful for your players. So what can you do within your position to get exactly what you want? I think language in general is important, and thinking about how we use the language too often, there's not the thought behind it to think about what is the result I want from this.
Thanks for listening to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast this week. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure to follow us on our Twitter account for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Read our show notes, analysis, and coaching articles at blogs.usafootball.com. And check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. Finally, subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Google Play, and Spotify, as well as give us a 5-star review on iTunes. As always, be sure to check back next week for more one-of-a-kind content.